You know, Dan, I walk through down the street in New York or someplace and I smell good coffee. But some of the best coffee I've tasted recently came from Scooter's Coffee. And co-founder and CEO Todd Gravey is with us today to talk about his coffee, Scooter's Coffee. Todd, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you a little bit. Just to correct something there, I'm not the co-founder. Don and Linda Eccles founded Scooter's Coffee quite a number of years ago, about 18 or 20 years ago, and I currently have the privilege of serving as CEO of the company.
Well, that's interesting. Well, then I'll ask you a question. What made you decide to be part of it, and what makes Scooter's Coffee so good?
Yeah, I got into the business a number of years ago, over 10 years ago, I believe now. My sister and brother-in-law, I was serving as CFO for a company, a boat builder down in Florida, and my sister and brother-in-law called me and asked if I wanted to get into the coffee business with them in Kansas City. Scooter's at that time was an Omaha-based company and exclusively located in Omaha in terms of its units. And so my sister and brother-in-law wanted to take Scooter's to Kansas City. And so we got started in Kansas City, basically just building and owning coffee houses and cutting our teeth there. And so we learned quite a bit slinging drinks as a franchisee of Scooter's years ago. And what we liked about it, and to address your other question, what we liked about Scooter's was, well, first of all, just the culture of Scooter's is very family-oriented. Don and Linda Eccles started that culture of helping others be successful and really maintaining a culture of family, even as we've grown over the years. So we loved that. Of course, we loved the product, high-quality product. We think it's as good a cup of coffee you're going to get anywhere. But really, I think what distinguishes Scooter's is the overall experience we bring to the table. Our focus is very clear. We want to serve the best cup of coffee you can get anywhere and do that with big smiles and fast service. Don Eccles, the founder of Scooter's, always used to say to us when we got started in the business years ago as franchisees, if you serve them a great cup of coffee, do it with a smile, keep your store clean and well lit, and then do it fast. We need to respect their time. They're on their way somewhere in the morning, so we want to respect their time. And I think that that message that Don gave us years ago and that we still talk about today as a larger company really is kind of our separator in a competitive market.
Well, I'll ask one more question, and then how do you choose your franchisee?
Yeah. You know, it's we have a vetting process we go through. Of course, there's always, you know, there needs to be financial review to make sure that they can capitalize a store. Generally speaking, these days, we're looking for multi-unit franchisees as we expand in our current markets and new markets. So there's a little bit of a vetting of financial bandwidth of our franchisees. But once we're beyond that, you know, the blocking and tackling of that a little bit, then it really comes down to, do they fit our culture? Are they excited about the business? You know, one of the things we always look at when we're visiting with people that are interested in owning a Scooter's is how excited are they about it? And you can kind of tell sometimes if people are sort of kicking the tire a little bit with you, or do they genuinely, I mean, they love the product, they love what we do, they love us and our culture and want to be a part of our family. And so, you know, I think once you get beyond sort of the typical process of vetting a franchisee prospect, then it comes down to just getting to know each other a little bit and you know, developing a trust and a relationship.
Dan?
Thank you. Welcome, Todd.
Thank you, Dan.
I want to follow the question that Don just asked you. I'm the money guy, so I get asked the money questions. What does a, even though you're looking for a multiple franchisee potential investor, what does a typical franchisee need to open a store?
What's it going to, the startup cost?
Yeah.
Well, two things, I guess, two parts of that question. What are we looking for in terms of maybe net worth, et cetera, to qualify them. And then what does it cost to build a Scooter's Coffee store? You know, we're generally looking for multi-unit stores, but if somebody was looking to build a store in a market that we're already in, you know, I believe we're typically looking for $500,000 of net worth, and, you know, $150,000 to $200,000 of liquid. If you want to go beyond that, which is typically the relationships we're seeing these days, where someone wants to own 5 or 10 units, sometimes more than that, but if it's 5 to 10, we want to see $1 million of net worth and $250,000 of liquid. To get a Scooter's up and running, of course, a franchisee needs to capitalize that. They do that in multiple ways. Banks, obviously, traditional banking or SBA financing are typical. Some of our franchisee prospects come with cash, and they build the first store with cash, first one or two, and then they finance or leverage with financing after that. But a store costs all in with a franchise fee, you're up and running. Typically, there's a range of somewhere in the $425,000 to $500,000 turnkey.
Yeah, terrific. Okay, thank you. That was an important question to get answered. The other thing I want to pursue is, Who is the profile of the person today that's looking to buy multiple Scooter franchises?
Yeah, it's evolving quickly for us. We see sometimes people that are looking for a second career. In fact, often mm-hmm. actually, someone's looking to move into the next season of their business life. It might be somebody that owns multiple units of another concept. That, I would say, hasn't been as much a part of our past, but as we've advanced from 50 to 100 to now near 170 units, what you're beginning to see now is you get a little more on the radar in the regional or national landscape as a growing franchise and successful franchise. You begin to see other concept owners. Of course, it needs to align with ours and not be competitive, but you begin to see more of that emerge. In the early days, it was somebody that wanted to own a coffee house and, you know, something much smaller in scale, which is perfectly fine, and we still do that. But, you know, the profile of the person often is someone who is looking to move on to do something new. Could be somebody from the military that's looking to do something post, you know, that career. I think I see as we advance into the future, we're going to begin to see larger multi-unit franchisees emerge within the Scooter system. You might call it a mega franchisee. This is a little bit down the road as we grow, and that often would be probably a group or a business that owns other concepts and wants to advance or bring coffee into their portfolio in the markets where their other businesses are located.
What do you think, if looking at your business, what do you think is the fundamental difference between you and Starbucks?
Well, here's what we seek as we look to, you know, I guess capture more market share. We have to stay just fundamentally committed to certain key principles. And over the years, as we've gone from 1 to 170 stores, we've tried things, we've made some mistakes along the way, picked ourselves up, and moved on. But where we find ourselves coming back to is ultimately what we call our drive-through kiosk. It's a 450-square-foot freestanding building, drive-through only. I think as we've learned over the years, we've found our best success for our franchisees, and success of our franchisees is always top of mind for us. They have to be profitable. We need profitable franchisees. We need to do that just because it's the right thing to do, but profitable franchisees, of course, want to advance, and that's what we do. We want them to own more stores. But it's staying committed to drive-through only, although we do have some sit-down drive-through stores as well, and we still build those, but it's staying committed fundamentally to drive-through. You have to really be better on every point. Starbucks has such a quality and highly regarded brand that to compete with that level of competitor, you really have to hit it on all points. You need to do it all the time. But in addition to that, and hitting it on all points for us is amazing quality product and drinks. We have to be world-class there. And then you have to do it with speed. But we talk about one other part of our business often with our franchisees, and that is the relational dynamic of our business. We're unique in that we're not like maybe a restaurant that has customers that might come once a month or once every couple of months. We have customers that come in every day, sometimes twice a day. So what begins to happen there is this really interesting relational dynamic between our baristas, our coffee servers, and our customers. And if you understand that, and we've learned to understand that more over the years, this can really separate you from the competition if you focus on that. When we focus on relationships, loving on our customers day in and day out, and then make sure that the integrity of the product stays strong in terms of a quality mocha or a quality latte or a cup of coffee, do it with a smile, and then I can't stress enough how important speed of service is. And when we do all those things and hit all of those points, we can compete well with Starbucks.
So when you have you gone the Starbucks route with the line extension of pastry and donuts and cookies and all the other stuff, or are you staying true to just coffee?
No, we serve food items too. The traditional pastries, muffins, cinnamon rolls. We have an amazing cinnamon roll. And we have our own bakery, so we make all of those products ourselves so we can control quality and consistency. Now, we have breakfast sandwiches, breakfast burritos. We sell just a ton of breakfast burritos with coffee. So we definitely want to have ancillary food items to our drinks, and they need to match the quality of our drinks, and they need to be done through the filter of can we move that through with speed. So as we assess our food mix and our drink mix, and whenever we look at exploring new additions to that product mix, it's done through the filter of is it quality and can we move it through the line quickly? Because I think if we ever begin to become stray too far from a core, who we are at our core, which is fast and friendly service of drinks and food items, we're at risk of slowing down our drive-through line, which is just, I think, fundamentally critical to sales growth for our franchisees.
What is the typical wait time to get an order processed from the? I assume they do get external kiosks like a typical drive-through restaurant. Here's the menu items. You order what you want. You go to the pay window and then the pickup window. How long does that process take?
Yeah, here we measure it this way: throughput in the morning. We want cars when they do go through that process. They arrive. They're going to be in the morning a car or two behind the order box, much like you see a Starbucks do. But at Scooter's Coffee, they're going to pull up to an order box, and then they're going to move to the drive-through window. Now, some of our old models, and I'll get to your question on time here in a second, some of our old models have two-sided drive-throughs that don't have an order box. So we have both of those out there in our system. I think the most current model we have in terms of drive-through is a 450-square-foot building, order box, pickup at a window. But we do have some two-sided drive-throughs as well. All of that said, what's the speed? We want to move them through it in a minute or less per car. And we measure that window in, window out. So as a car moves to the window, we want that drink ready and the barista prepared to conduct business, tender the transaction, and move that customer out, all the while smiling, remembering John's name and his drink, and taking care of that customer with a big smile, but fast. So a minute or less per car is the goal. And as new stores open up around the country, it's one of our key focus points because that's kind of the thing that our franchisees have to and their employees have to get trained up on is how do you move quickly in the morning as a team and move cars through, minute a car. And again, I mean a minute once they get to the window and out of the window. So if you're the eighth car in line as a customer, our expectation is that we want you through in about 8 minutes or less.
Dan and Todd, we've got to stop a moment for a word from our sponsors.
At Valero, we believe life gets lived between every fill-up. So whether you go down the road on two wheels or four, whether your Wednesday night is spent racing to the grocery store or down a track, and whether you're dropping off the mail, the pizza, the kids, or all of the above, we're here to make sure you're never running on empty. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
We're here talking with Todd Gravy, who is CEO of Scooter's Coffee. Back to you, Dan.
Thank you, Don. Todd, we were talking before the break about what your targets are, and you said a minute window to window. How does that compare to the service time, say, of Starbucks?
Starbucks has a little bit broader menu. I believe that's faster than they're moving them through. I want to be respectful to what I say in terms of what they're doing. They have a little larger menu and more food items. And so I think what that means is the manner in which they move customers through their drive-through might be a little bit different. I believe we're faster than them, but we do have a smaller menu of food items, and that is for strategic purposes. What we want is, and I've said this before earlier in the show, we want the best drink you can get in town as faster than anywhere you can get it in town, with friendly baristas that want a relationship with you. But if we do have food items, we need to be careful that they're moving at the same pace of drinks through the window and through the production process in the coffee house.
In order to hit that one-minute target, what does your shift look like in the morning? How many people?
Yeah, well, I'll stick with the drive-through kiosk as our primary model. It's different in a sit-down with a drive-through, but in the primary model, the kiosk, it depends on volume. But let's just take maybe an average volume or one of our higher volume stores. They're typically going to have four employees in there. Now, if the store is still growing and it opened up recently, it's growing, it might have three employees in the morning. What we have to be careful of is to make sure that we have the right amount of staff in there for volume. And then maybe as important or more important than the number of staff to achieve speed. Remember, your question is kind of a derivative of the discussion of speed. How do we move cars through? A minute in the window, 1 minute out of the window. It's positioning in the kiosk. So you might have four employees in there, but if they're not positioned, we call it putting them in stations. They need to be in their stations during go time. Our go time is the morning rush. We're a coffee house. So they have to stay in position. We need to give them the tools they need, the POS systems and the tools they need to be able to make the drinks quickly, make the food items quickly. And then I can't stress it enough, stay in position. We had one of our baristas, our managers of one of the stores, our franchisee, this store was growing quickly. And it's a store that had been around a little while, but they did some shifting in terms of how they were staffing it and how they positioned people in this drive-through kiosk, the baristas, the employees. And the franchisee sort of interviewed the manager and said, what's the secret? A rhetorical question. The franchisee was an experienced franchisee, understood what was happening in the store. Why are your sales growing so quickly? And the manager said, gosh, nothing overcomplicated here. We move people through. We focus vehemently on speed of service and upselling. Speed of service and upselling. And that's how that particular store's manager had. Oh, and I'm sorry. My point was, inside of that sentence of focus on speed, keeping my employees in stations was critical, and then I upsell, and the store has found great success with that.
So what you're saying is that the key to your success, and I'm not berating it. I'm just listening to what you're saying, and then I'm going to say it back to you. You said it more. You said nothing so far, or very little about the quality of your coffee, that it's superior, the best cup of coffee in town. But the thing that you focused on more than everything else is the speed at which you deliver your coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how are you saying that that's how you are differentiating yourself from other places to get coffee? Is speed of service?
I think it's awesome. Yeah, Dan, I think it's all of those things. I think when I'm focusing on speed in this particular conversation, and in another one I might be focusing on the quality of the product with you or others that I speak to about what we deliver, it's the overall experience, and it needs to be well-balanced. If you, for example, if your goal is that you want the best cup of coffee you can get, you can deliver, You want it done by a friendly, smiling barista and fast. Imagine if you pull any one of those out of that mix and you're not excellent at it. Let's say you don't have that great of a product, which we do, but you're fast and you've got a smile. You can probably do pretty well. Fast and friendly service is key. But if you're slow with the best mocha you can get in the world, but you're moving the car through at 3 minutes a car, that is going to be a problem for the customer experience. And, of course, if you don't have smiling baristas or you have something other than that, that also gives an impression or an experience that's different. So it's not that I'm saying that we don't have quality product. We focus on quality product. There's no doubt about it. But it must be always in tandem with a barista-seeking relationship and just being friendly, looking the customer in the eye, and delivering that relational component of our of the scooter's delivery or our promise to our customers. And then speed of service has always proven to be just fundamental to successful, profitable units.
Okay, I just was curious. Is there something magical about 450 square feet?
Well, it's just, I think, where we've evolved to. Nothing magical. They used to be smaller than that. I think we were around 275 to 300 square feet years ago. But as volume has increased, storage can become an issue.
And so, right, that was going to be my next question.
Yeah, two things got us to a better place. There, two reasons for going from 300 to maybe 450 square feet over the last decade. One is storage. Higher volume stores need more product, naturally. Number two is we wanted to, as we began to think about next steps to advancing from just a local Omaha company to something more regional or national, we began to think about what do we look like when we're on the road. Think of a morning traffic commute route in a city. How do you present yourself and your brand to the road? And so by going a little bit bigger, we were able to have just a little bit more presence on the road for our brand. We're 18 feet tall, too, which allows us to hang our signs at a certain height. Visibility is critical. We haven't talked about location and how you find quality locations, but visibility is just critical in the morning. So the 450 square foot offered presence, more storage, but not going so big that we don't remain nimble. One of the beautiful things about the kiosk model is it allows us to go into certain places on high traffic morning commute routes that maybe others couldn't go because of the little bit smaller footprint. That nimbleness has allowed us to advance nicely into new markets on roads that maybe a larger concept couldn't do or position themselves.
I was going to go in a different direction. Starbucks has been trying to automate its ordering system for the last 5 years. Panagra has tried it. And then there's a study just out that said that that jobs under $40,000 are the most vulnerable to automation. What are you doing in that area? And if at all, are you doing that?
We're watching, of course, that. I think there's opportunities there, but I'll focus maybe a little bit on where I think there might be some risks. We talked about we're a drive-through coffee company. We focus on drive-through. We focus on speed to the drive-through. So, as those types of new ideas and innovation emerges in our industry, and Starbucks, of course, is testing things, we want to make sure that doesn't disrupt our drive-through lane in any way. Now, remember, drive-through, Starbucks has mostly sit-downs with drive-through, so their model is a little bit different. But when you're focusing on a 450 square foot drive-through kiosk, everything is about performance through a drive-through lane, and so that kind of innovation needs to be vetted well by us to make sure we're not slowing down our drive-through lane. But also, I can't stress enough how what we do is so unique in terms of the relational dynamic between our baristas and our customers. And because of that, I'd also want to be a little bit careful to assess risk that we're very careful that we maintain relationship but with our customers. And so, you know, I know I've been focusing on quality product and speed of service, but one of the things I keep mentioning is smiling, looking the customer in the eye, know the customer. They come through five or more times per week often. And so maintaining relationship while not disrupting our drive-through lane, are key vetting components for us. That said, we want to be a leader as well in the industry and look for opportunities where technology or innovation like that can be meaningful for our franchisees.
One of the things that we haven't talked about is oversaturation. It almost seems like there's a Starbucks or some way to get Starbucks on every street corner. And how you we talked a little bit earlier about your speed being one of your critical components. I think you even said if you had a great cup of coffee, but if you couldn't deliver it, it wasn't much of a business. So what's going on in the United States with this prolific demand for coffee? What brought it around?
Yeah, well, I think it's a poignant question that has to be asked is when do you become too saturated? I believe, in particular in the Midwest where we're located, that there is a lot of room for growth. I think specialty coffee, or the Midwest is underserved in terms of specialty coffee. Now, on the coast, it's a little bit different. It is becoming more saturated and competitive, so you better be prepared to compete and compete with excellence. But our coffee drive-thru is interesting, and Starbucks focuses almost completely on drive-thru as well now. It's a bit about proximity, but for us, it's more about traffic patterns. So when you start to think about saturation, we have to look at it through the filter of where are people driving in the morning and what routes. We have some stores that are a quarter mile, less than a mile apart in metros, but they serve completely different traffic patterns because what the consumer is looking for is they're looking for convenience through a drive-through lane, and they're looking for it, we said this many times on the show, fast and friendly with a great cup of product through a drive-through lane, so they want the convenience of that. So then you look at that. That might be different than a restaurant that needs to, or a Home Depot, or a business like that that needs to really look at saturation and population. And we do that a little bit. But as much as anything, if not more than anything, we look at traffic patterns and who we're serving on the road. And then, of course, we need to be cognizant of competition and where they're located as well. I would say this, though, as we expand our brand outside of the Midwest, right now our focus is primarily the Midwest because of an underserved Midwest. It's where we're headquartered. But I think because we focus on drive-through, mostly drive-through, these drive-through kiosks, it becomes not that you can't oversaturate, and we want to be aware of that because we need to look out for our franchisees. But the drive-through concept does allow you to, navigate through new store development differently.
And one real quick last question. What's the difference in price between your whatever their – I'm not a coffee drinker, but what your best product versus their best product? What's the difference in price?
We're pretty close to Starbucks. We serve a premium product. They serve a quality product. I won't go menu line item. I won't go, drink by drink, but fairly comparable price. I think we might be just maybe a nickel or a dime cheaper on some drinks, but fairly comparable.
Good. Back to you, Don.
Well, we have to unfortunately say goodbye to Todd Gravy. He's CEO of Scooter's Coffee. Thank you so much, Todd, for being with us.
Dan Perkins here with your recalculating.biz small business tip of the day. So you formed your business and you used an LLC. Do you really know what you want to do? How to get there? Not without a business plan. An old Chinese saying, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there. So here is your recalculating.biz small business tip of the day. There are a lot of great books on building business plans. I suggest you start simple. As your business grows, you can become more elaborate. I recommend The Business Plan for Dummies, available in local bookstores or at Amazon. If you know nothing about business plans, then a complicated plan may well scare you away from doing one at all. You used to be able to do things by the seat of your pants, but no more. Don't be a dummy. Get a book, and you'll be smarter for it. This has been your Recalculating.biz small business tip of the day. I'm Dan Perkins.
Life. It's made up of the simple day-to-day moments that keep us all running on full. Full of joy, passion, and restlessness. It's singing full on to your car radio with the windows wide open. It's a whole bunch of early morning rush hours and a few late night runs for Rocky Road. It's full of pit stops and drive-thrus. It's life, and we live it between fill-ups at Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at valerocleangas.com.
We've been asked recently by a number of people, how can they listen to past shows? And if you go to recalculating.biz, you'll find a link to iHeartRadio, which will allow you to go back and listen to shows that you didn't get a chance to finish or never heard. So we encourage you to go there, recalculating.biz.
Dan, our next guest is Shannon Miles. She runs a fascinating company, which I'm going to let her tell a little bit more, the audience a little bit more about. Shannon, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
When I was going through all of this, Shannon, before the show, how would you describe your company, and tell us your website and anything else you want to, and then Dan can take over and ask you the first question.
Absolutely. You know, I was listening to your last caller or participant on the show, and I used to work at a drive-through coffee shop in college. That feels very full circle to me, to be following him up. Yeah, he doesn't love that. So, my company is Belay, and our website is belaysolutions.com. We are a virtual services company, so we handle a lot of the administrative and back-end tasks that growing businesses need to have done, but they don't necessarily have to have all of these services in-house. So the four core services that we provide are virtual assistants, bookkeeping, which I think we'll spend the majority of the time talking about today, website design and support, and copywriting.
So, Shannon, welcome to the program. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Thank you.
Virtual means something different, perhaps, to me than what it means to you. So why don't you explain to our audience what virtual bookkeeping means?
For us, our virtual model means that all of our team members work from their home or from coffee shop, but primarily from their homes. They're all based in the United States, and so whether it's, you know, an employee that we have in the Atlanta metro area where our company is headquartered, or one of our contractors around the country, we're all working in a remote capacity. So that's what we mean when we say virtual. It's not to be confused with Siri or Alexa. That's a whole different idea of virtual.
So of the four services that you said that you offer, you said we were going to talk about bookkeeping, and you're probably right. Because I was going to ask you the question, what is the service that small businesses need to matriculate to first out of everything out there? Is it bookkeeping?
It was for us. You know, when my husband and I left our jobs in 2010 to start our company, and when we incorporated, we were trying, you know, we're doing it bootstrap, trying to save money. And the two things that we outsourced first were a virtual assistant for 5 hours a week to help us with contracts, sales proposals, getting calls set up, that sort of thing. And then the second thing shortly thereafter was bookkeeping, because I tried to do it myself. And it was not a good use of my time, and it is certainly not in my personal wheelhouse of skill set. So it was a very natural thing for us to outsource right away. And I think that's true for a lot of our customers as well.
Was it driven because of the value of your time, or was it that the business was growing to the point that you needed more and more of your time as the person in charge of the books to make sure that everything was done, and you also had other duties within the company, and bookkeeping fell behind?
Yeah, it is all of those things, really. It's absolutely fair. And I think, you know, we encourage our prospects and our clients to really take a hard look at where their time is best spent. You know, when you're starting out, whether you're on your own or you're partnering with somebody and you're creating a company, there are a million things to do to launch, to grow the business, to find your clients, to service them well, all of that. And bookkeeping has to be done. You need to have proper records. You need to know where your money is going. You need to pay your bills on time. You need to have oversight into your finances. But oftentimes, it is something that gets put on the back burner. And it's one of those things, if you don't stay on top of it on a monthly basis, it'll catch up to you and it'll be a mess to clean up after the fact. So for us, it was, yeah, so many other things needed my attention that were a higher value for my attention than bookkeeping. But we knew it was still an important function of the business to run properly and to have great financial oversight into what was going on. So it was a combination of all those things, excuse me.
That's okay. As I've talked to people like yourself and CPAs and accountants who deal with small businesses, they say the aspects of the bookkeeping process that creates the biggest problem for them as accountants when they come back in is that many times small businesses, for a myriad of reasons, don't pay their taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates a major problem of reconstructing what the actual income was, what the taxes should have been, and then getting them onto a schedule. Do you see that too? With new businesses coming in, they're not paying enough attention to their tax payments?
Yeah, we do. Our organization, we are not CPAs, we're not accountants, so we focus strictly on the bookkeeping itself. But, you know, in order to know the taxes that need to be paid, you got to have your books kept in proper order. So we'll often work with our clients, accountants, or CPA firms to provide the information that they need. But what we find is most often, you know, bank accounts haven't been reconciled in months. Their general ledger is a mess, you know, and maybe they've got things over-categorized, so it's too confusing or cumbersome for the business owner to really have good insight into what's going on. Payroll, we do payroll too, and that is where we see people get in trouble with their taxes most often, because you can take some time on your books and have them a mess and nobody knows, but if you don't have your payroll right, people watch out for that. So you have to have your payroll in order for sure.
So you started in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And how has your growth been?
It has been remarkable. I mean, we often get asked, you know, what's the biggest challenge you face in your business, and it's keeping up with the growth while not diluting our customer service, because we really place a premium on our relationship with our clients and the quality of the work that we provide, and we never want growth to negatively affect that. But no, thank you for asking. The business is doing really well. We've grown significantly. We've been on Inc. 500 fastest growing companies, or 5,000 for 3 years in a row. So it's been quite a ride.
One of the reasons that Don and I started this show is that we believed that with the advent of Trump becoming president, there was going to be a resurgence of small business in the United States, that the government was going to do things that would encourage small business, where the previous 8 years there had not been as much encouragement for people to want to take the risk and go out and start a business. And we saw that in payroll and many, many different monitoring factors. Now we see things dramatically. And as we've had guests like you on the show, they tell us their business in the last 6 to 9 months has just exploded, because more and more people are now willing and interested in taking the risk to start a small business and securing their future. Do you see that happening too?
You know, we have seen steady growth in the businesses that we personally serve as an organization. You know, when we started in 2010, we were still in the recession. And it was a really interesting time to have a services business, you know, up and coming, and source people to partner with the clients. And And so it looks a lot different now than it did then in terms of the economy. But yeah, we're definitely seeing a lot of exciting new organizations crop up that the services that we provide are able to scale with them. And so it's always fun to see not only a new organization get started, but then to see them grow and then be able to continue to grow with them and support them in that.
Do you have a particular type of business or businesses that you think you do well in? Or do you just work with anybody? And I don't mean that in a negative sense. Are there things that you're really good at and other things you know you're not that great at?
Yeah, you know, we're not for everybody, right? Some people need and want to have somebody physically in their office with them so that they can be eyeball to eyeball and see the work getting done. And so for, you know, organizations that operate under that model, we're not a good fit. But in terms of like industry type, you know, our bookkeeping service actually started in the church. That's sort of the genesis of our organization. We serve, you know, all for profit and all types of entities now, but that was the genesis of it. And so we just launched for profit bookkeeping this year as we rebranded and became Belay. We had different entities prior to that. So we're, you know, as far as like the types of industries that we're serving with bookkeeping right now, we're scratching the surface in a lot of ways. But we have a very strong base of church and nonprofit clients as well to kind of build off of. Our virtual assistant business, we've been serving for-profit businesses almost since day one. So it's really cool to see those clients say, hey, oh, I'm so glad you guys are finally offering bookkeeping. Let's talk, you know, and to being able to further serve an existing client, whether it's in another business services organization or healthcare or consulting or finance, like those are some of the industries that we serve often.
What kind of person are you looking for as an employee?
Cool. That's a great question. That's a $1 million question, right? you know,
that's why I
skill set is that's right. Man. Skill set's critically important, right? It's really hard to find, people who have the right skill set, the right personality, the right resourcefulness, the right availability, the right technology, all of that in one. And so that's why, you know, I think we've been so successful because we've been able to figure those things out versus, you know, how much time it takes for a business owner to go and, you know, come up with a job description and post the, you know, position online and interview like crazy and make a bad hire and all of that. So, I mean, we put our candidates through a pretty rigorous screening process because we know how important it is to get it right on the front end. And so we're looking for somebody who has QuickBooks experience, who has been in bookkeeping for a number of years. These are not, you know, people who just took an online course and they're ready to go. Like, they have been doing the service in various capacities before they partner with us. And so that technical skill set's important, but I'll tell you what, having a good personality is important too. You know, especially when you're virtual, you want to have somebody who's going to be warm and connect with the client and really serve them well and not just view it as a transaction.
Shannon, what are the three questions you think a potential new small business should be asking you about your services?
I think they should ask, how does it work? You know, help me understand the process and what's it going to look like for me on a regular basis. I think they should ask, how do you qualify your candidates? You know, get a comfortability with the type of provider that we would source them with. And yeah, I think that they need to ask, you know, how is this going to help me? How is this going to help me grow my business?
And what do you ask out of three questions you most ask potential clients?
When's the last time your books were reconciled? I say it tongue in cheek, but it does help us kind of scope out, you know, what kind of situation are we getting into? You know, what have you been doing currently for your bookkeeping? You know, is this something that you personally have done? Is there somebody, you know, who was doing your books for your organization and it's now gone? Like, where are we entering into the situation? And finding out like the platforms that they're using and getting a sense of the scope of, you know, bank accounts and transactions per month and debit cards, credit cards, revenue sources, all of that helps us scope the opportunity so that we know sort of what the monthly pricing needs to look like and the person that we would match them with and all of that.
We're talking with Shannon Miles, who is president of Belay Virtual. We'll be right back.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Before you hear this, or this, or even this, before you turn a key, step on the gas, and let it rip, before you get up and out and on the road, you have to be fueled by something. Make sure that something is Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at valerocleangas.com.
I wanted to share with you something I read over this past weekend. And okay. I get a lot of research, and one of the things I get is about trends. And there are two trend reversals that are being written about now, just starting to come out. Trend reversal number one was, or is, stay-at-home dads. More and more men who were staying at home are finding that the experience isn't what they thought it was going to be. And the same is true for stay-at-home workers who do virtual commuting, that they thought it was going to be something and it turned out to be different because one of the things that they miss in the virtual office is the lack of interpersonal relationships and communication. So if this trend continues in stay-at-home moms and virtual commuters, how is that going to affect your hiring practices?
You know, you mentioned the economy earlier and the propensity for new businesses to get started under the current administration. You know, we the biggest reason we lose somebody from our team is that they would go full-time back to an office, which for me blows my mind. I couldn't imagine ever doing it again, but everybody's situation is different, right? There's just more of those jobs available now than even when we first got started. So that is always something that we will monitor. You know, we try really hard on the front end to make sure that somebody isn't just dipping their toe in the water and saying, I think I can work from home. It sounds like fun, you know, but not really being serious about the reality of it, because it can be hard. It can be disconnecting, but it doesn't have to be. You know, there are technologies out there that bridge the gap in relationship where video chat is highly, highly encouraged by our team. We, you know, even if you think, oh, bookkeeping is just transactional, it's behind the scenes, it does not have to be. We encourage Zoom, which is the preferred platform that we use, but there are a lot of them out there. We encourage
you
frequent
said Zoom?
Communication. Zoom. Yeah, it's zoom.us.
Okay.
And so just being able to see somebody's face, you know, and have a conversation, even if it's online, it increases the connection so much more. And you can see, I don't really think they understood what I was saying there. Let's go back and talk about that some more. Little things like that matter when you're working virtually. So I think there's that. You know, we also invest heavily in our contractors, and we provide a closed Facebook page for them so that they can post their questions about, hey, you know, my customer is wanting to do this particular thing. Has anybody else had experience with it? And so then you'll see a bunch of comments come back. And creating a community within our organization, I think, has been foundational for us. And it's rewarding, too. So I could see that, you know, being virtual, working from home can be isolating, but I've actually heard the opposite from more people than not, is that because they're working at home, they can connect more with the people in their lives that they love and want to be with, and not just who they're stuck next to in a cube for 8 hours a day.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with what you're saying there. However, I would add a little bit of a different perspective. If the economy is not going anywhere and household income is declining, the risk of working in an office is the risk of being fired. And more so, perhaps, than a virtual situation. And so maybe there was a lot of people who, for risk purposes, went to go virtual. And now that the economy is more stable and wages are going up, maybe they found out that they could make as much money or perhaps more going back to that office. And it was perhaps a little easier decision for them to make today because they see less risk in the job marketplace than they did just a few years ago.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
So if that's the case, then what's your business going to look like in the future? You think it's still going to continue to grow dramatically, or is it going to slow down, or what?
No, I do think it's going to continue to grow. I do think people value their autonomy, and virtual working provides that a lot more than a static office job. I think that more organizations are looking to move out of offices so that they don't have the overhead. It's a, certainly a more affordable model to execute on. So, I think that, you know, it has to make economic sense for, you know, somebody to leave the office and work virtually. But I've also seen more people, you know, staying in the workforce instead of just completely staying home and exiting altogether and not working. That I don't think that's going to change.
We've been a virtual organization for 10 years, and I tell you, the major thing that I miss is the Christmas party. But
I love a good party, too.
Do you get your people together once or twice a year just so that they can talk about the things, or do you keep everything virtual?
You know, there's kind of two components of our organization. One is our W-2 employees that are in the Atlanta metro area, and then the second component is our 1099 contractors around the country. We get our employees together at least twice a year, all of us together, and then in different settings we have maybe smaller meetings with departments or whatever. Is for like corporate meetings. We do have a Christmas party. Maybe you should come. We have the Christmas party. We do family day. We do volunteer day. So our corporate team gets together pretty frequently for being a virtual organization. And then actually we're doing something really fun in late October, where Brian and I, as CEOs and some other key members of our team, are going to go to Nashville and have a contractor luncheon. So we're creating some opportunities to get to meet our contractors face-to-face, which is always very cool. And we've seen, like, our team members go on vacation and realize, oh, I'm going to be really close to her. Let's get together for coffee. So we haven't pulled all of those contractors together face-to-face before, but we have connected with them in more of an ad hoc format.
I want to follow that quick follow-up with what you just said to Don. What role do you think going forward sharing ownership in a virtual office will become important?
Say that again. I'm not sure I follow.
You and your husband own the company.
Yes.
What about allowing your employees, who are virtual employees, have an opportunity to buy into the company so that they have ownership stake?
Yeah, and an equity stake in the company?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that is an interesting thought. We have thought about that for You know, for people who have been with us for a long time or whatever, we do. Brian and I own the company 100%. And so to shift that and open it up to the employees is something to think about. It's not anything that traditionally we felt like we needed to do it, you know, for buy-in. But who knows?
But if you think about it as a way to attract talent that you need to grow your business, this is one of the things that you could do that would help attract and allow you to get somebody of higher caliber, because and they're going to have an ownership stake in the business, and as a result, they're probably going to be more stable as far as an employee. But just something to think about. Don, back to you.
That is, thanks.
Go ahead if you want to respond.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, you know, we have focused on other benefits for our team that seem to attract the talent that is the highest caliber. And our employees stay with us. You know, they don't – it's very – our retention is above 95%, I think, the last time our HR manager reported on it. So, you know, that is definitely, you know, as the market changes and – you know, other opportunities present themselves for team members, it's something to consider. But like I said, we haven't felt the need for it. We just have focused on other benefits that have made sense for our demographic.
Right. Don, do I have time for just squeezing one quick question?
No, I'm afraid not, Dan.
You'll have to have her back.
It's been fascinating. We've been talking with Shannon Miles. She's co-president of Belay. Your website, Shannon, and how people can reach you?
It's belaysolutions.com. You should be able to connect with us anywhere on there.
Well, can you spell it out for our audience? And thank you so much for being with us.
It's been an honor. I really appreciate it. Yeah, the website is BelaySolutions.com, Belay Solutions.
Thank you so much. A link to your website will be on our website, Recalculating.
Dan Perkins here for Recalculating for Small Business with your tip of the day. Should you belong to a local marketing network? One area of potential business is other small business owners through marketing networks. These groups usually meet once or twice a month for lunch and discussions. Sometimes the group will invite a guest speaker to talk about how they are building their brand. People in different businesses generally go and make up these groups. If you have a computer problem, perhaps one of the members of your group can fix your problem, or at least tell you about somebody they've used to fix their problems. Sometimes members of your group can use your product or services. So here's your Recalculating for Small Business tip of the day. Reach out and ask your fellow business friends if they belong to a marketing group. And if they do, tell them you'd like to go. Shop around and find a group or two that you like. You'll make new friends and maybe find new customers. This is Dan Perkins with your Recalculating Small Business tip of the day.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit costs. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Well, Dan, what do you think about what happened today?
Well, I thought Scooter Coffee was interesting. Not familiar with the company, but using a kiosk, 450-square-foot kiosk model with four people, all I could keep thinking about when he was talking about his kiosk was Photomart. You know, they did their kiosk. They weren't 450 square feet. They're really concerned and focused on speed of delivery. There's a presumption that they have a good quality product and that they're trying to build a niche based on quick delivery. So we'll see.
Dan, we only have time to say goodbye for today.
Well, it was a great show, and we had some terrific guests, and hopefully our listeners enjoyed it and also got some good ideas of some of the challenges of starting your own small business. So this is Dan Perkins.
And Don Mazzella.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.